Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Asia Pacific markets are trading higher this morning on the back of a strong performance on Wall Street overnight. Investors are also digesting the latest economic data out of Japan, which shows that consumer prices there are increasing faster than expected at 4.3%. I'm Michelle Martin. Good Friday morning. Joining me now as we break down all the action, Ryan Huang. How's Friday looking?
TGIF, Michelle, I hope you've got your weekend lined up for, you know, what's to come.
Indeed. I cannot wait for it. Now, let's start this morning in the United States, where Wall Street has climbed to its best level in nearly 8 weeks, amid signs that corporate profits and the U.S. economy overall may be more resilient than expected. However, if you're on the fence or a market bear, there is still plenty of news to support a pessimistic outlook as well. Let's start with a couple of companies that are outperforming. These are actually European-based. One is behind some of the most famous brands in alcohol, and the other sells luxury goods, and they are both topping expectations. The whiskey maker is Diageo, which is based in London. The luxury company is France's LVMH. So we profiled LVMH earlier this month as a possible good play for the European markets, Ryan. And now the company is posting record sales. So help us understand what's behind LVMH's success in the past quarter.
Yeah, record sales coming in at $112.8 billion. Net profit at around 14 billion euros. So both are new records for the group. So that's a sign of pretty strong demand. And if you talk about the recession and how people are pinching their pennies and tightening their purse strings, it's not really being reflected in the latest earnings from LVMH. So we are looking at Europe, the US and Japan, those markets rising sharply, benefiting from strong demand from local customers, and also, I think this is important, the recovery of international travel. So that is seeing, I guess, tourists snapping up stuff as they go overseas and get all these VAT-free purchases. So that's something perhaps that's driving LVMH results so far.
LVMH, run by Bernard Arnault, who surpassed Elon Musk this past year to take the title of the world's richest person. So LVMH, by the way, is an acronym for several major brands. Do you remember what it is? I mentioned it a couple of weeks back, I think. Think handbags, champagne, and brandy. So it's Louis Vuitton, Moët, Hennessy. Okay, always a good conversation starter. Hey, do you know what LVMH stands for? LVMH shares are up nearly 18% since the start of the year. Now, next up, I mentioned Diageo. It is the world's largest spirits maker, and its sales grew more than 9% in the last 6 months of the year. So what is driving Diageo's strong performance?
Yeah, it looks like more people are drinking, and they have been able to raise prices and pass it on. So that's pretty much the essence of the results. Net sales rose 9.4% in the 6 months ended December 31st. So that beat the analyst forecasts of 7.9%. So all in, we are looking at people willing to splash. And also what's worth noting is Diageo has its fingers in different segments. So for those who are more cost conscious, they also have products for them. So they are seeing people shift their spending there. So they are also benefiting from that shift in spending.
That's interesting, because I was reading an article about how this could also reflect that consumers are not necessarily drinking more, but that they're buying more expensive types of alcohol. So I guess both ends of the scale. In fact, just last night I was speaking with someone who had thrown a party recently and insisted on serving only top shelf items. Fabulous. Ryan, if we take a step back, what do you make of the fact that luxury goods and alcohol sellers both seem to be doing well?
Yeah, it's interesting when you look at the wider backdrop of all the concerns playing out around the world, the global economy perhaps slowing down. But I guess the rich still will be not as rich, but still able to buy all these luxuries. I think this is where that defensive value comes through from some of these luxury names. They are still able to hold on to some of their market share, and people still aspire to spend in these product segments. So in that sense, they have been able to hold on. And of course, the revenge spending coming through as people return to travel, and of course the Chinese market, as they also open up borders to travel, that's going to be a big boost for some of these big names as well.
Yeah, so aspirational spending. We've given you a couple of names to think about that with that theme in mind. Let's take a look at more corporate earnings. We'll do that in a moment. But first, I want to examine the latest economic data that helped fuel buying overnight. The U.S. economy grew by 2.9% in the fourth quarter as compared with a year earlier. That is slower than in Q3, but it is still pretty good in the face of rising interest rates and inflation. Walk us through the numbers, Ryan.
Yeah, let's take a look at the headline numbers. And it's 2.9% for the fourth quarter. That is October to December last year. So that's better than I expected, 2.8% reading. So all in, it is a bit of a mixed reading because it was slower than the 3.2% in the third quarter. So better than expected, but cooling to some extent from the prior quarter. So you have a bit of a mixed picture here when it comes to GDP. So depending on who you ask, some people think that is a sign of a more resilient economy. At the same time, it's also some signs of a slowdown. And of course, you had the Fed rate hikes perhaps coming through and trickling down the various levels of the economy. So that's perhaps a sign that the Fed's rate hikes may be working and they might not need to do as much next week. So looking at the consensus forecast, 25 basis points is the expectations for a rate hike next week.
Investors applauded the latest economic data in trading overnight. The S&P 500 rose more than 1% to close at its highest level since early January. Tech stocks did even better. The Nasdaq jumped 1.8%. However, it seems that the right time to issue a familiar warning is here. Past performance does not guarantee future returns. And this is true for both companies and the economy overall, which makes this a good time to bring up another headline that caught my eye this morning. And that's the U.S. economy may not be as strong as those GDP numbers suggest. Why is that, Ryan?
Yeah, if you look at a headline, it is looking okay. But if you dive into the details, I think that is where the warning signs start to emerge. And a couple of warning signs are around consumer spending. So that accounts for about 68% of GDP. And that rose 2.1% for that quarter, down slightly, 2.3% in the previous period. And if you look at the personal consumption expenditures price index, it was up 3.2%, down sharply from 4.8% in the third quarter. So signs of consumers starting to tighten their purse strings. And also the inventory buildup was a big factor in lifting the GDP numbers. So in terms of momentum and sustainability, it's going to be a big question mark if there is going to be a need for as much inventory in this current quarter. And of course, that could mean a slowdown if that does not come through.
Good points, Ryan. So overall, are you optimistic or pessimistic about the U.S. economy and the global economy as we look to the year of the rabbit?
Yeah, it's going to be like the rabbit. It's going to hop up and down. I think it's not going to be a straight line. So you have all these pockets that are going to be doing better than others. Mm-hmm. And perhaps we might be in for things to get a bit worse before they get better. And I think it's going to be reflective of what's happening in China as well. The reopening is going to mean COVID cases will pick up in the short term. But when it does pick up into full stride, I think that is going to lift momentum in the second half of this year. That is the consensus expectations going by most reports I've been reading. They expect a bit of a rebound in the second half of this year. So maybe a bit more to brace for before things get better.
Indeed. Everybody looking out for that inflection point in the middle of this year, Ryan. So let's talk about companies. And one company that led the way overnight was Tesla. Shares of the electric vehicle maker jumped 11% after reporting stronger than expected profits last quarter. During an earnings call with investors, Tesla CEO Elon Musk gave an indication of where he thinks the company's biggest competition will come from. I'm going to give listeners a moment to think about this. So where do you think Tesla's biggest competitors are located and who might they be? All right, fill us in, Ryan.
All right, Michelle, how does Made in China sound? That is
perfect.
What Elon Musk is thinking will be the biggest competitor to his EVs. And I guess not a big surprise because last I counted, there are more than 400 EV makers in China. Wow. Of course, we hear about the big ones usually, but there is a huge competitive market in China. And of course, we've heard about BYD and many more in the mix. And the competition is so intense that Elon Musk had to offer discounts in many of his markets, including China. And this is what he said about the Chinese car companies. They work the hardest and they work the smartest. And he thinks they are the most competitive in the world. So I think those are pretty valid reasons.
Fair enough. There are a lot of good EV companies in China at last count. But US and European automakers are also investing big in electric vehicles as well, right? So what do you make of the argument?
Yeah, I think there is a case here. Because if you look at the smartphone space, right? Xiaomi has actually been able to take on some of the big boys. And some people might say, hey, their phones look a bit like Apple phones, but they have managed to stand their own ground with some of their own designs as well. So I would not be surprised if they also get a huge market share in time to come in the EV space globally. So that's going to be something to watch out for. And of course, there are so many EV players. One of them has to be coming to the top at some point.
I like that analogy with Xiaomi, Ryan. All right, it's time for Up or Down, and let's start with Intel. We all figure out which way we think Intel is moving. So what do you think, Ryan?
Okay, Intel is going to be a down for me, and this is, I guess, something a lot of people are bracing for, but I think it was worse than expected for a lot of people, including Intel. So horrible quarter, including an inventory glut, so they did not get as much demand as they hoped, and they had too much supply. So across the board, sales, profit, gross margin, and outlook all looking quite bleak. So it's a sign of how there's been this slump in IT spending. People just not buying as much phones, devices as before.
Yeah, forward guidance for Intel weak as well. Its share price is also down nearly 10% in after-hours trades. So it's a down for me for Intel. Let's look at the game maker Hasbro, Ryan.
It looks like a down for Hasbro. And it is looking to cut about 1,000 jobs from its workforce. That's about 15% of its employee base. So it's, I think, a reflection of how tough it is right now to run a business. Costs is something they have to grapple with. And the very uncertain economic backdrop is also a factor. So it looks like they are trying to right-size the company before things get worse.
Yeah, tough times for the world's largest game maker. And apparently shoppers were not out in force in the past holiday season. So Hasbro projecting a disappointing fourth quarter. And of course, those layoffs you mentioned, laying off 15% of a workforce, all leading me to say it's a down for Hasbro this morning. Let's look at SAP, the tech giant.
It's also a down. I'm looking forward to the day when we don't have to talk about layoffs anymore. So another layoffs on the table here. This time from SAP. It's cutting 3,000 jobs, 2.5% of its global workforce, and also exploring the sale of its remaining stake in Qualtrics. So quite reflective of what's playing out in the tech space. Just not as strong demand as before. And this is the, I guess, new reality that many of them have to face.
Let's look at Marina Bay Sands. Maybe I should have started this at the top of the show when we discussed luxury brands and alcohol companies. How's Marina Bay Sands doing?
Yeah, save some good news for the back of the show. So this is where we've got some bright spots for MBS. They are seeing record gaming, and this is off the back of strong retail revenue in the fourth quarter. No surprises as we saw tourists coming back and perhaps gambling a bit more. So good news for the likes of Las Vegas Sands. And of course, will also be a spillover effect to Genting.
Yeah. So Marina Bay Sands, record gaming revenue. It netted more than $680 million last quarter. So good news there for MBFC. Marina Bay Sands, I should say. And finally, Fraser Centrepoint Trust.
I am going for an up here. They have gone shopping. So FCT and its sponsor, Fraser's Property, have teamed up to buy a 50% stake in this Serangoon shopping mall called Next. If you've never been there, it's like a maze. I've
been there and it's always packed, right?
Always packed. In fact, it's 99.9% occupancy as of the end of November. That is, I think, one big reason why they were interested. So they bought a stake from a subsidiary of NTUC Unit, Mercatus Cooperative. So they bought a 50% stake in Goldridge, which owns, manages and operates Next. So they say a big reason is because of the connectivity of this shopping mall. And if you're familiar with this place, it's connected to the bus interchange and the MRT station. Pretty much one of the largest in suburban retail malls in Singapore.
Makes parking really easy if you're going to Next as well. So one more story before we go. We talked on the program about this before, Ryan, the AI chatbot, ChatGPT. I've been having a lot of fun with ChatGPT, putting to it all sorts of questions on the nature of life and things like that. And I've been actually quite entertained. But some writers at Bloomberg put the ultimate challenge from a business perspective to ChatGPT. Can it replace all the analysts that we speak to, Ryan? They asked ChatGPT to create an ETF that can beat US equity markets. So how did it do?
Yeah, I guess you would not be surprised that they could not come up with the answer. So basically, you have the Bloomberg team trying to get the ChatGPT AI tool to come up with an ETF or a way to beat the US stock market. So pretty much the answer was a non-answer. No, it answered that it could not possibly design an ETF because it does not have the right input, data, intelligence to do so, and all the disclaimers as well that you can think of, you know, and consult your own financial advisor. So it is, I think, a fair answer in a sense because everyone has a different risk appetite and different horizons when it comes to investing. So it is quite fair to give that answer, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, if you're a chatbot and your whole goal is to crunch enormous amounts of data and make sense of it all, I think this could just be a filter that's in place for now. Who knows? ChatGPT maybe can forecast the stock market.
Maybe you have to pay for a premium version.
That's it, Ryan. That's it. That's a new tier. We'll look out for that. Thank you so much. That's Ryan Huang on his way to enjoy the weekend.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.